Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome to Friday. How you doing? Thanks for tuning in. Well, I've got some audio I want you to hear tonight. It's just going to freak you out. It's Sean Hannity, Christopher Hitchens, the baby-faced former chief executioner for Abramoff. That would be Ralph Reed. And a couple of little grunts from Alan Colmes. You got to hear this. I'm sure you probably already have. But we're going to play some cuts from it. Also, the House of Representatives will be meeting Monday to debate a vote of no confidence on the Attorney General of the United States, Abu Gonzalez. Has this ever happened before? I don't know. Did you do any research on that, Kathy? I have no idea. Not that it will matter to the tough-talking Texan from Kittybunkport, at all, George W. He'll just dig in his spurs and stand by his little Tejano until the bitter end, or until his daddy tells him Gonzalez has to go, like what happened with Rumsfeldt, right? And just for kicks and giggles, because it's Friday, we are going to play that audio from Hannity and Combs. It was too funny to just talk about it, so we're going to play. And also joining us next hour will be our special guest this evening, Sam Cedar, to talk about his new show that begins this Sunday, appropriately titled Cedar on Sundays. All right? So I'll tell you what, let's kick off the program with some really, 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 really upbeat, positive news from the Gallup organization. Did you happen to see this? Gallup reports, the Gallup organization reported on Wednesday a sudden plunge in its regular, what they call satisfaction index. You know, how you doing? Are you doing all right? How do you feel about being an American? Yada, yada. Only 25% of Americans now say they are satisfied with the state of their country. Jesus, God, thanks, George. What an ass. Only that's down 8% in just 1 month, and one of the lowest ever measured. 25%, one out of four now say they're satisfied with the state of our country. Oh, Gallup said, quote, the current 25% satisfaction level is very low by historical standards. Since Gallup first asked this question in 1979, the average percentage of Americans saying they are satisfied with conditions in the country has been running about 45%. 25%. Now, what's weird, not weird, but expected, the latest poll finds that 45% of Republicans, come on, that's almost half, 45% of Republicans saying they are satisfied, only 12% of Democrats. 45% of Republicans say they're satisfied. Well, that kind of dovetails us with what I've been saying for a very long time now, that all Republicans are sick, hate-filled, cheating, fearful, lying, sneaky, anti-Americans. As a matter of fact, Paul Krugman in today's New York Times said the same thing. He wrote that he'd been looking at the race for the Republican presidential nomination, and he has come to a disturbing conclusion. Maybe we've all been too hard on George Bush. That's what he says. He says, now, no, I haven't lost my mind. Bush has degraded our government, undermined the rule of law, led us into strategic disaster and moral squalor. But, Krugman points out that the leading contenders for the Republican nomination have given us little reason to believe they would behave differently. Why should they? Why should they? The principles George W. Bush has betrayed are principles that today's Republican Party, dominated by movement conservatives, the principles they no longer honor. They don't give a damn. Republicans don't care about the rule of law. They don't care about the Constitution. They don't care about mass murder in another country. They don't care. They don't care about flunking schools across the country, a degraded biosphere. They don't care. They don't care. They don't care about veterans. In fact, as Krugman points out, rank-and-file Republicans continue to approve of Bush's policies, and the more un-American the policy, the more Republicans support it. My God! It's not a shock to me. When I read Krugman's column today, though, I almost called the New York Times and asked for his desk so I could say, Paul, you and I and Gallup. I don't mean to make it sound arrogant. You've come to the same conclusion, Truth Seeker. You know it. You know that Republicans are sick, just demented thugs. Look at this outpouring of emotional vomit over the death of this large pig, Jerry Falwell, who bit the big one the other day. What is it? What was it that Christopher? You may hear this. Christopher Hitchens said it the other day, and we've got it on the sound. But I hope you can hear it because it's kind of garbled at the end. But Hitchens says, if you gave Falwell an enema, you could bury him in a matchbox. Yeah, no kidding. A little bit of happy news, though. When was it? Wednesday. I think it was Wednesday. It was Studs Terkel's 95th birthday. We got to know him when we lived in Chicago, Kathy and me, and hung out with him, did a couple of events with him, the Bughouse Square revivals. When I separated from WLS, he called me, called up. I answered the phone at our apartment in Chicago. I said, hello. He said, the dirty sons of bitches. He didn't say, hi, this is Studs Terkel. I'm sorry, you're gone from the dirty bastards. God damn them, the sons of bitches. You know, and I held the phone away from my ear, and I said, Kathy said, pointing at it, going, who is it? I said, Studs Terkel. Who else could it be? He's more of a potty mouth than I am. He celebrated his birthday on Wednesday at the Chicago History Museum, which when we lived there was the Chicago Historical Society. Will in Chicago sent me the information. Thanks, Will. And Will writes, he is still active, speaking out against warrantless wiretaps and other abuses by the Bush crime family. It's sad, Will writes, that this old man has lived to see the rise of the Bush administration after having seen the rise of fascism in Europe and McCarthyism in America. Yet he has always come across as hopeful that we take our country back from Bush and his backers, the corporatists and the dominionists. Like Studs, Will writes, it is up to us to be active, regardless of our age, and work for an America and a world that reflects our deepest values. The times may be dark, but Studs Terkel serves as a reminder that we can get past the darkness and create a more just society. Let Studs serve as an inspiration to us, and let us build a nation and a world that honors the sacrifices and the work of the just and lives up to our highest aspirations for our children and our children's children. Well said, Will. Well said. Well said, indeed. Studs Terkel, 95. When we left Chicago, he was what, Kathy? 88. I think we've been back for about 7 years. Studs Terkel, if you have not read his stuff, you really should. Studs Terkel is a connection to the world of Saul Alinsky, for example, the world of the old organizers, the old fighters for justice and truth, real justice, real truth. Quite a guy. When we lived there, remember, or no, I guess we had come back, Kathy, remember when his wife died, which really upset him. He'd been married for years and years. And then shortly after that, remember his apartment was broken into? And he was there when the burglar was there?
Yeah, it was a great story. I don't remember all the details, but I do remember that he talked the guy out of hurting him or something and said, there's my wallet, take some money and get out of here, you punk, or something.
Right.
And he was like 90,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, he's from the old school, an old organizer, worker for social justice. Union movement, out of the Mary Mother Jones. Was it Mary Mother Jones? Was her first name Mary? Oh, damn, I should know that. I do know it, but it's clouded up. Anyway, Studs Terkel, 2 days late. Happy birthday, Studs. America wouldn't be America without Studs Terkel. Bam! And your friends, they all come crawling.
to that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Another bit of weirdness. All kinds of weirdness the past few days. Oh, come on. All kinds of weirdness the past 7 years. But the news is out, and thanks to Suzanne, who sent this to me. Donald Rumsfeld is going to set up a new foundation, so that he can remain engaged in public policy issues and offer what is referred to as teaching and research fellowships for graduate and postgraduate students. This is according to the Washington Times. They write, Rumsfeld has moved to new offices in D.C., where he's working on setting up a new foundation, according to Larry DeRita, former Pentagon spokesman and Rumsfeld aide. Yeah, he's out of the Pentagon, I guess, huh? The goal is to promote continued U.S. engagement in world affairs in furtherance of U.S. security interests, according to Mr. DeRita. Rumsfeld has not decided on writing his memoirs, but if he does, all proceeds would go to support the foundation, according to Larry DeRita. And then Suzanne offers some potential lessons that Rumsfeld could offer his pupils if he... I don't know if this is Suzanne's work or if she cut and pasted here, but they're good, Suzanne. Here's some potential lessons Rumsfeld could offer his pupils. One subject for classroom discussion, winning a war in under 6 months. remember when he said it is unknowable how long the conflict will last, the war in Iraq. It could last 6 days, 6 weeks. I doubt 6 months. Here's another one. How to be greeted as liberators. Remember when he said he was asked, do you expect this invasion, if it comes, to be welcomed by the majority of the civilian population of Iraq? It was Jim Lehrer on PBS NewsHour asked the question. And Rumsfeld answered, there's no question that they would be welcomed. So here's another topic he could teach, how to create the perfect war plan. He says, of course, the implication that there was something wrong with the war plan is amusing. That's what he said.
How about the art of writing the perfect rhetorical question?
How about asking questions and answering them yourself? The art of asking and answering your own questions. That's pretty good, too.
Am I upset about that? I don't know. Should I be? Why would you think I am? I couldn't tell you.
Armies you have versus armies you might want. That's another topic that could be set up for graduate and postgraduate students in something. I don't know what the course heading would be. Remember, he said, as you know, you go to war with the army you have. They're not the army you might want or wish to have at a later time. And my favorite that he might teach, locating weapons of mass destruction. That's a good one. He said back then, it happens not to be the area where weapons of mass destruction were dispersed. We know where they are. They're in the area around Tikrit and Baghdad and east, west, south, and north somewhat. Sorry, son of a bitch. And you know what's really weird? He will get lots of funding. He will get all kinds of funding to set up this crappy, disgusting, psychopathic so-called think tank. And I can remember back in the day when Air America, before they sold out completely, would have sold its soul to get funding. I know that Nova M Radio is looking for investors. But some pig, some warmongering degenerate like Wolfowitz too, but I bet you Wolfowitz will join him. But some warmongering thug like Rumsfeld, all he has to do is open up an office and say, I'm open for business. And the money will just flow in. And then it says here, no word yet on whether Rumsfeld's foundation will be folded into the think tank on French political thought that President Bush plans to create. You see, Bush told ABC News last year, I'd like to leave behind a legacy or a think tank, a place for people to talk about freedom and liberty and the de Tocqueville model of what de Tocqueville saw in America. That's what Bush said. Oh, God. It's weirdness beyond weirdness, isn't it? Pat Buchanan has weighed in. Who is right, Rudy Giuliani or Ron Paul? Buchanan, this is carried at antiwar.com, the website antiwar.com. It's copyright, of course, by Creator Syndicate Incorporated. That's who Pat writes for. But it showed up in this particular instance on antiwar.com. And in this column, Buchanan talks about who was right. The decisive moment of the South Carolina debate. I want you to hear this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The killing chill takes over him. His victims will not know. The lust of death's possession will overtake his psycho mind. He won't be happy till he smells the beer. He's the angel of death. Angel of
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Christopher Hitchens was on. Now, we're going to do this first. We'll do the Pat Buchanan thing a little bit later. But Christopher Hitchens was on the Hannity and Combs program the other night with Ralph Reed after the huge blob of human debris, Jerry Falwell, stepped off this mortal coil. And it got very interesting. Hitchens, of course, is making the talk show circuit because of his new book, God Is Not Great. And he squared off against Hannity and Ralph Reed on the program on the subject of Falwell's death. Was this last night? I guess it was just last night, right? The results were priceless. Alan. Alan Combs. First, he kind of sparred with Hitchens a little bit.
Are you not hurting his family and others who may have no dog in that hunt, but who would just like a few moments to celebrate his life and have some peace?
Well, I don't care whether his family's feelings are hurt or not. But if they are, they can take comfort from the extraordinary piety and stupidity and, generally speaking, uniformity of the coverage of the man's death. For a vulgar fraud and crook like the Reverend Falwell, it's an obligation to say what one thinks about him, or be left off the air and have people like yourselves broadcasting only piety. And that
I'm not broadcasting only piety. I did my radio show, and now we're having you on here to talk about your view different than what else
you're
the media
having me
is saying.
On and then, you're having me on and then arguing that maybe it's bad taste to have me on.
Well, it's always bad taste to have you on, Chris, but you're very entertaining. Hitchens then lets loose on Hannity, which was even more fun. Ralph Reed here starts this off. He first speaks about the Right Reverend Falwell. Then Hannity asks Hitchens to respond.
We ought to show a measure of respect and appreciation for their family and for their loved ones and for those who are grieving right now. And our thoughts and prayers ought to be with them, regardless of whether we agree with Dr. Falwell.
Christopher Hitchens.
Oh, Christopher. Play the world's smallest violin. Listen. He established a business, a racket, in my opinion. He was a religious businessman in the same way as Mr. Ralph Reed is a religious entrepreneur. He's left the business to his children. It's a hereditary job. Let that console them. You can't have me on and say that I have to say I'm terribly sorry he's dead.
Hey, Christopher.
One reason you can't ask me to do that is because I am not. I think we have been rid of an extremely dangerous demagogue who lived by hatred of others and prejudice and who committed treason by saying that the United States deserved the attack upon it and its civil society in September 2001 by other religious nutcases like himself.
He profoundly and repeatedly apologized, and I'm sure you're perfect
not
in
enough.
Your life.
No,
I'm sure you're perfect
enough,
in your life and that you've never made any mistakes.
I've never committed treason like that.
Isn't that so typically this little turd, Sean Hannity? Oh, well, I'm sure you're perfect. These right-wing talk show hosts, television hosts, whatever they are, invariably, they've never let me down. When backed against a wall, they all sound like 5-year-olds.
Well, you're another.
Now the sparks really flew as the baby Jesus, that's our pet name for Hannity, accuses Hitchens of attacking Falwell's family, which, of course, Christopher Hitchens never did, but that doesn't matter to Sean Hannity.
You think it's a pity that there isn't a hell for him to go to, you
yes,
said.
Yes, I do.
On his death, you write, the discovery of the carcass of Reverend Falwell on the floor of his obscure office is, you know, almost zero significance, except for perhaps two categories of people, etc. You also say the evil he did will live after him.
Yes.
I knew Reverend Falwell, Christopher. I know the good work that this man has done.
Tell me about it.
I know you think you're the smartest guy in the room, but you sound like a jackass when you attack his family like this. But I know what he did for unwed mothers. I know what he did for alcoholics. I know what he did for drug addicts.
Excuse me, sir.
Yeah.
I did not attack his family, and no fair-minded view of yours will see that. I'm not going to be conscripted into saying that it's my job when you invite me on to discuss this man. First to say how sorry I am for him and his family. That isn't what I feel. You, no doubt, as a Christian, or whatever you are, require hypocrisy of people. I'm sorry you're asking
the wrong person. I am asking for human decency, and if you don't think it has an impact on his family, to use even the phrases tonight, that he's vulgar, fraud, and a crook, and then to say that the discovery of his carcass, I think you are incredibly mean, incredibly selfish, and incredibly thoughtless.
You invited me, sir, to give
my opinion
of the departed. I give it to you, and you say, well, that might that not upset his family? I said it while he
was
alive.
Well, you give his opinion
about...
Might
that not have upset his family, too?
Oh, my God. Hannity, you're such a jackass. Hannity then compares those who dare criticize Falwell as atheists and commies. This is fun.
You know, there are a lot of good atheist communists out there like Stalin and Mao and Pol Pot and... You know, they slaughtered millions. Jerry Falwell slaughtered nobody in his life. He may have misspoke once or twice, but he devoted his life to his religion. Do you have nothing good to say about him at all?
No, I repeat, Jerry Falwell lived on hatred and superstition and bigotry. He preached dislike of people whose lives he knew nothing about. He raised money from credulous fools.
So you don't know anything about his life.
Now, excuse me, sir. You can either ask me on and ask my opinion, or you may not. But I don't have to be here if you're going to take that attitude.
Well, you could leave.
You spent the first half by saying I had no right to the opinion you'd ask me on to express. Now you're tiring me out. I repeat that.
No, what I said is your opinion was thoughtless. What you wrote was crude and mean and hateful. Oh. That's what I said.
You took up all the time for my answer with your long, rather unlettered question.
Oh, okay.
Jerry Falwell made a career out of sponsoring dislike and superstition, said that people he didn't like were going to hell, said the United States deserved to be attacked by Islamic fascists, said he believed that people would be raptured into heaven, leaving all the rest of us to wallow behind. I think his death is a deliverance.
Yes, it certainly was, wasn't it, Christopher? Last one from tonight's from last night's circus. You have to strain to hear it over the crosstalk and the bumper music here, but you got to listen to Hitchens' parting shot about the matchbox. Here, Alan Combs turned to Ralph Reed for comment about Falwell. Hitchens had some choice words about Reed. Hitchens says, "And why not a word now?" Referring to Ralph Reed, from the friend of Jack Abramoff.
And why not a word now from the friend of Jack Abramoff?
Wait, we only have a moment here, Ralph. Here's an important question about Jerry Falwell. Let me get Ralph in here. Here's an important question about Jerry Falwell.
That's all he needs now. Let's hear from the Abramoff faction.
We only have a moment left. Ralph gets to speak, too.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Hold on, Christopher. Ralph, the big controversy about Jerry Falwell was he fused religion and politics. Would Jesus have advocated the GOP, and was he right to bring in...
What a question.
Marry those two and give that impression. We only have a very short time left, Ralph.
What he said was that there were certain transcendent values, such as the protection of innocent human life, the sanctity of marriage, the need to defend the state of Israel, his opposition to communism, his opposition
to
radical
defend the Israeli
jihadism, and what he believed was that those values should be reflected in public policy. And I think that, you know, when you have a community of Liberty University with its 10,000 students in residence, you have 22,000 members of his church, you have millions of others of people who looked up to him and admired him, I would really hope that people like Christopher would show the decency and respect to let those people mourn
and
remember his memory without being torn down and attacked.
Tell it your business partner.
Good try, Christopher. Good try.
Personal friend of mine, and I'll miss him. When we come back, Caldwell gets too close to a dancing box.
If you gave Falwell an enema, you could bury him in a matchbox. Oh, my God. You know, you take a couple of low IQ'd hustlers. One of the most bestial of all hustlers, that would be Ralph Reed, who trades on a reptilian fear of death that resides inside the most primitive cortex, or primitive part of the brains of human beings. And they have somebody like Ralph Reed who trades on that, makes money on that. Slithers and slimes his way across the stage. Even the psycho Christians here in Georgia rejected this Ralph Reed for lieutenant governor. He ran for lieutenant governor. Now, the fact is, the person that beat him, Casey Cagle, is another right-wing suck-up and a half-wit. But Ralph thought he could, you know, use his Jesus song to become lieutenant governor of Georgia. And, of course, he got sent packing because he is slimed. He's covered in scandal and fraud. But when you have a thug, a little baby-faced punk thug like Ralph Reed on the one hand, and then you have a baby-faced punk thug like Sean Hannity on the other, who would sell his mother's ass if it meant that he would get on another a network or get ratings. He's waiting for Limbaugh to overdose so that Hannity can be considered the number one talk show host in America. You get Hannity, who is, I think he's a high school dropout. I have no idea, but Hannity is one of the most ignorant people on television. Which is one of the reasons, I guess, why he's been limited to cable TV. And then into the mix, you drop poor Alan Combs, who I don't know what Alan Combs is about. I really don't. But you put those three halfwits together with, whether you like him or not, a real intellectual, an educated man like Christopher Hitchens, an author, a political scientist, a philosopher, a wit, an Oscar Wilde type, where it concerns his use of language and his rapier wit. Put them all together, and when it's all over, Hitchens is going to walk out buffing his nails, asking for a glass of wine, while the other three are going to sit there and try to figure out where all the cuts and gashes came from. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy.
There must be over 50,000 screaming love and more for you. But add a touch of hate at Rome, you will rise to a greater power. We will win ourselves a home. You will get the power I love for.
Cause Jesus, he knows, and he knows I'm right. Been talking to Jesus all my life. I guess he knows me, and he knows I'm right. Well, he's been telling me that we're gonna be alright.
I base a lot of my foreign policy decisions on some things that I think are true. One, I believe there's an Almighty.
What's two? Three. It's been a crazy week. The first part of the week, was it Tuesday or Wednesday? Somebody sent me the link from the Drudge Report first and then from Limbaugh's own website. Apparently Limbaugh was in New York and he was at a steakhouse there and Clinton was there. And Bill Clinton, not Hillary. Bill Clinton was there. And Limbaugh was there with a couple of his friends, and Clinton saw him. And so Clinton came over and, introduced himself and chatted for a moment. If you go to Limbaugh's website, or if you did a couple of days ago when this first came out, I've been saying this for years, ever since about 1999, that all the right-wingers ever wanted was to see Clinton's penis. If they tried to get it through a court order, if you remember, there was an effort to make Clinton go into court and drop his trousers so that they could find out whether or not Paula, what was her last name? Oh, my God. Paula, are you drawing a blank too, Kathy?
Paula de la Trailer Trash.
Is that what it was?
I think
Paula.
I'm Paula. It's me.
Because Paula had swore under oath that Clinton had strange markings or a unique shape to his penis. So these right wingers, that's all the men, that's all they ever wanted to see. You know, call it a man crush or whatever. So, you know, I've been saying that since 99. Paula, what was your last name? Oh, my God. And I think a lot of people have not really believed that. They've said, well, no, that's not true. It may be true with some of these low-grade, you know, like senators and members of the House, the right-wingers. But the megastars, people like Limbaugh and people on his level, Jones, Paula Jones, people on his level, no, Malloy, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. Well, after Clinton stood there and talked for a second, Limbaugh, the way he relates the story on his website, you talk about sounding like a breathless adolescent girl. And he went on and on and on his program. And what was at his website, of course, was a transcript from what he said to his audience. Well, in the middle of his monologue about how he was just thrilled, his little heart went flutter, flutter when Bill Clinton came over and talked to him, which is the case with all of these people, all of these right-wingers. All they want to do, these right-wing men, is just get a little kiss from Bill. That's all, a little kiss from Bill, and they're okay. They fall apart for a moment. They lose their water, perhaps, but then they're okay. You know, it's just like, oh, my God, he touched me. He touched me. So in the middle of his monologue about how Bill Clinton came over and talked to him, Limbaugh started getting emails, he said, from people who were saying, no, no, don't go near the enemy. They're going to suck in and you're going to be just like them. And Limbaugh would read the emails on the air and then come back on the air after reading the or he'd read them on the air. And then he would say, no, no, you don't understand. In a social setting like this, it's perfectly okay, I'm paraphrasing, it's perfectly okay to do what I did. You know, it's a former president of the United States, and he came over to talk to me, and, you know, my rather lard-encrusted heart just went flutter, flutter, flutter. It was almost like doing OxyContin again. But isn't this the truth? This always happens. And he goes on and on and on about this. Clinton is just masterful at taking these bulbous right-wing neo-fascist blowhards on television and radio and just reducing them to simpering 9-year-old or 10-year-old little girls. It's amazing. So the most recent victim of Bill Clinton's charm was the pig man himself. Did you read that? Did you see that on his website or listen? Do you listen to his program? I don't. I have a very trigger finger kind of gag reflex when I hear certain people. Alan Combs is one. Sean Hannity is one. Limbaugh is one. Who's that yellow-haired scum sucker on Fox in the afternoon? Was it John Gibson? He's another one. Paula Jones was another one. You know, when I hear their voices, I go, oh, you know, it's a very, very touchy gag reflex. So I don't listen to it. But somebody sent me the link, and I looked, and I read it, and I thought, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Rush Limbaugh is just getting all damp because Bill Clinton came over and talked to him. And he was just, oh, my God, it's Bill Clinton. They just get so giggly, don't they? Don't they just get all giggly? And can you imagine what would happen to Sean Hannity if he were put into a comfortable room with Bill Clinton and left alone for a couple hours? Yes, indeed. All right. We got time to squeeze in part of a phone call. I think we can. Rick is calling from Peoria. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Thanks for, excuse me, call me by surprise, damn it. I know we're coming into a break. and it's kind of fantasy. I'm a Democrat. I'm actually registered as an independent in AZ.
Right.
But of course, many years ago, I discovered I can't vote in anything till the big deal. But having said that, it's kind of a fantasy, but kind of, you know, I'm not happy with Pelosi. I'll make it really quick. Or Harry Reid, what happened today, what did they strip out of the bill, the pork and the timetable, and that still wasn't good enough. I would like to see in maybe a Disney fantasy, and I'm kind of not kidding.
Yeah.
Tanks show up at the White House tomorrow, and we have a coup d'etat.
Sort of like the Boris Yeltsin days in the Soviet Union.
Thank you. And that'll make it quicker for me. Sort of one of those where they're marched out into a stadium. I'm not talking to Sparrow. I'm 52 years old. I survived Vietnam, so I don't, but you know what I mean. And I'm just sick of these people.
Well, I understand. And that point of view is gaining, shall we say, some cachet because I think most Americans are so frustrated. Our Democratic leadership won't take this bastard on at a time. It would just take one match and he'd go up in flames. Hey, we got to leave it there. Thanks, Rick.
I know. Impeachment would be good, but short of that, God damn it, do something with these people. Thank you, Mike.
All right, Rick. We'll be back with Sam Cedar. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour, the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Joining us now from somewhere in the wilds of New York is Sam Cedar. Sam, let me get this out of the way right away. How have you been hanging in there since the terrible news of Jerry Falwell's death? You doing okay, buddy?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it together. I got to tell you, it's been very, very difficult. I'm just trying to make sure that I was not in the vicinity of his cone of protection, not being around him.
Really. Well, I'm still, you know, I know an awful lot of people who happen to be Jewish, and you know, as Falwell said, the Antichrist is walking among us now, and he's Jewish. I'm just wondering, do you happen to know who that might be?
Well, I won't give anything away, Mike, but I can tell you this: I do celebrate the high holidays.
Sam, it's good to hear from you. How are you doing? Seriously,
I'm doing good. How you doing, Mike? Thank you so much for having me back on. You know, this is the first time I've been on radio in about a month.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Have you been listening to your replacement?
I tuned in at the beginning of the week. It was a real great opportunity to hear from Talkers Magazine.
Yeah.
I found that very illuminating. But,
what an organization that is, huh?
It's
hi, would you like to be in the Hot 100? Send us a check for 10 grand, buy a full page ad, and you're in.
The sad thing about, you know, the whole thing is that, of course, my Sunday show debuts this weekend, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to continue to have, some role in what's going on over there. But, it's just a different philosophy about, what people are interested in. I have no interest personally, in Anna Nicole Smith the stories that the corporate media loves to focus on. And they do that because it's easy to report on and whatnot. I personally, in my whatever life I'm leading, regardless whether it's radio, I'm not interested in that stuff. And so I have no interest in telling, people about it. And if they want to get it, in my opinion, they can get it just about anywhere else.
Right.
Where I'm doing a show. So that was just...
Well, I got to tell you, when I let the word out that you were going to be on the program, I got just an abundance of emails, and I looked at some of the threads around the different websites, and you really, really, really have a following. You have people out there who are at once pissed off because you're on once a week now, but still happy that you're still available. for them to hear. And I you know, far be it from me to question decisions made at Air America. I'm the last one should question those decisions.
No kidding.
You know, I was on my way to work one day when I got the magical mystery phone call.
Oh yeah.
But substituting for Randy, for God's sake. But you really do have a following, and the one thing that I do not, one of many things I don't understand about talk radio is the fact that there are people in this business who are talented, who know what they're doing, who can carry a program and do it well. And they, or I should say we, in so many instances over the course of being in radio, have wound up kind of on the fringes. And that is not as a result of our ability, in this instance, your ability, but decisions made way above our pay grades. And sometimes those decisions are not, to me, they just make no damn sense whatsoever. And I think you fit into that category.
Yeah.
I really do.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Mike, when I used to write sitcom scripts,
right,
really crappy ones, but that you know, would never get made, but they would get get paid for them.
Yeah, get optioned, right.
The thing that I came to realize is that the guys who really do well in that business are the ones who are willing to put in something that they don't think is necessarily, well, no, let me rephrase this.
All right.
They don't challenge in any way the people who can continue furthering their career.
There you go.
And, you know, whether that's a direct challenge or whether that's a challenge in other ways, they're non-threatening. And, you know, you're talking about people more often than not who are in these positions who are there. They are very highly skilled at keeping their job.
That's
and
right.
Anything that prevents them from keeping their job, you know, and there's a lot of things like that in industry. And, you know, I don't see why talk radio would be any different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but, you know, be that as it may, you know, the beautiful thing that's happening, I think, across all mediums is that things are getting just a slightly more democratized by the web. And in some respects, you know, significantly more democratized.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
well, I think that's one thing, aside from the web, and you're right about the web, but I think that's one thing that those of us who were in the original train wreck that was Air America, one of the things that we did, and I'm including everybody from Al Franken all the way down to us, is that we certainly loosened up the attitude about what is acceptable on talk radio or what is listenable on talk radio. And it's really weird because Air America certainly did not bring the first liberal talkers out. I mean, there's liberal talk that's been going on ever since there's been talk radio. Randy's been around since God was a teenager. But what it did do, what Air America did do, was kind of focus and bring several of us together, you and Janine, Randy, me, even Al Franken, who, whatever, I'll leave that alone. But Mark Maron, a bunch of people, Mark Riley, a bunch of people at the very beginning who kind of cracked through that wall that had been put up by mid-level managers that just said, well, liberal talk is not going to be on the air. The hell it's not. It is. It's here. And I think the original concept of Air America, while that got sidetracked, in my opinion, I think that did kind of shatter that mythology.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, to a certain extent, as a viable format, Air America was the thing that put it in play.
Right.
You know, and I think all, you know, any liberal talkers, you know, whether they're on Nova M or on Jones, you know, they owe the opportunity for there to be progressive stations in formats existing out there from that first wave of what Air America was able to do, you know, under the auspices of a guy who, you know, sometimes it takes a con man to get certain things going. I'm not saying he was, because I don't have lawyers, but but yeah, you know, listen, I think there's obviously a future. There's an audience out there for it. The hard part is that there, you know, you have affiliates across the country where you have some really incredibly dedicated people selling the stuff, and then you have other affiliates where they just don't know exactly how to reach, because for so long, you know, talk radio has meant conservative talk radio.
Right, right.
And we have a much younger audience who are interested, you know, in liberal talk than conservative talk, which is, you know, you, that's basically the way society is going, too. And it's a different audience, and it's a different ad base, and it's just a question of really zeroing in. I mean, there are some great affiliates, most of which that are successful have are running you now, which I'm very excited about to see that you're back on as many stations as you should be, or at the very least heading there.
Heading there, yeah.
And so, you know, I don't think there's a problem with the format per se. It's just a question of who's going to be the next dominant player who believes in the format. And, you know, if there's an entity out there, I don't begrudge anybody who, you know, obviously who replaced me at the network, but it's more of an indication of a different business philosophy.
Well, that's, yeah, a different business philosophy, but also less rock throwers or bomb tossers. Not that those of us on the original Air America were necessarily that, but I think all of us, and you and Janine were very volatile.
you think so?
I think you guys scared that. I had to follow you every night. I think you guys scared the hell out of people. Janine really scared them. Because, you know, here's this cute little movie actress and a cute little movie actor, the two of you doing this really weird talk radio. I've got a break. I want you to hold on, okay?
I sure will.
Because I want to talk a little bit longer. Here's an email from Kathy who says, please tell Sam that those of us who really, really like his show, that we're not listening to his replacement. About a half an hour of that show did it for me! And it's exactly as Sam's saying, I have no interest in that stuff. We'll be back in a minute.
Get your rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We are talking with Air America radio personality and general all-around ass-kicker Sam Cedar, who with whom I worked for a couple of years when I was at Air America. Sam has a new program debuting this Sunday night called, of all things, Sundays with Sam. Is that right?
No, it's Cedar. It's Cedar on Sundays.
Oh, that's right.
And I should tell you, in the tradition of Air America, it turns out it's a three-hour show from 4 to 7 Eastern.
Yeah.
But my debut is only going to be 2 hours long.
Well, that figures. I mean, I don't know why that is, but it figures. I have to ask you.
I don't know either, to be honest with you.
I know. How's your daughter? How's Mila?
Mila's doing great. We're living upstate now,
yeah.
Up in Columbia County.
Right.
And so she sees deer on a daily basis.
Oh.
And I leave her outside overnight and see what she comes back with the next morning.
Yeah, does she bring it carrying it or in her teeth?
Well, you know, if it's small enough, she fits in her teeth. She's only 21 months old, so I don't put high expectations on her ability to carry something in her jaws.
That's true. Well, Molly is 34 months old.
I saw a picture of her recently. I can't believe it. It really is amazing how quickly they grow up.
I know. The first time we all met was when Kathy and I brought, we came to New York to meet the, we'd been on the air with you guys for about 6 months and never had met anybody. And we came up, flew up and brought Molly. And I remember, I've got a picture of Janine and Molly. If you remember that night, we brought Molly into the studio where you and Janine were doing the show. And Janine picked her up and held her about 4 inches from, you know, they were nose to nose. And Molly was just laughing and squealing. I still have that picture.
I'll tell you something. I thought Janine was going to kidnap her.
I know. I did,
after
too.
After that, Janine was completely smitten with Molly.
Oh, she was. That's do you hear from Janine ever?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, when I was doing my morning show, she would come on once a week as Senator Catherine Harris.
Oh my goodness! See, I was always asleep still.
No, I
didn't hear your morning show.
Janine would come on once a week as Senator Catherine Harris, and I have a feeling ultimately she'll be joining us, if not on Sundays, although I'm sure she will. But she's agreed to do some audio blogging on my relaunched blog.
Right.
And so that should be pretty crazy because, you know, God knows how long she'll go on for and completely uncensored.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It should be rather interesting.
Well, I've become a real radio potty mouth, and I owe it all to Janine, frankly. You know?
Yeah. Nothing would hold her back at all.
What are you gonna talk about? You've been off the air for, you said, a month?
Yeah.
What are you gonna talk about this Sunday?
The Comey testimony to me is the biggest stuff that's happened, I think, in just ages. I mean, this is just, when John Comey was the acting attorney general at the time that the Bush administration, basically their whole justification for their spying on Americans was thrown out the window by a Justice Department that sort of woke up,
right,
because someone from the Office of Legal Counsel took a look at this thing. And basically the story that Comey tells is that on, near his deathbed, essentially, John,
yes,
Ashcroft,
mm-hmm,
basically told Andy Card and Abu Gonzalez,
mm-hmm,
when he was White House counsel, basically to go F themselves.
Right.
Now, when John Ashcroft, the man who covered a statue of the breasts of a statue,
right,
the man who was anointed with Crisco oil when he took office, who believed that black cats were the sign of the devil, when he's the voice of reason in this scenario, I mean, all bets are off now.
Really?
I mean, really? This is just astonishing. This is just, it just blows my mind.
When we heard some of that testimony and realized that, essentially what you just said, that all of a sudden Ashcroft is saying no to illegalities, Ashcroft is saying no to wiretapping and surveillance. Oh, period. My, period. God, period.
Well, I mean, how bad must it have been what they were doing?
Well,
that's the thing, is that we know now that based on the justification that the Justice Department signed off on, that they certified,
yeah,
that is paper thin. That doesn't even hold up. I mean, how bad must have been what they were doing prior to that time been?
I know. And you know what I really liked was a couple hours later, after Card and Abu Gonzalez left, and Comey got a phone call, and they told him to show up in
yeah,
the White House, and he said, no, not unless there's a witness.
Yeah.
This is like, that's part of a Sopranos script.
But he has to get Ted Olson, of all people.
And Ted Olson winds up being the witness. Hey, hold on, Sam. We're going to take a break. Can you hold on?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to take a break and come back and talk some more with our good friend Sam Cedar, whose program debuts this Sunday night, 4 o'clock Eastern Time on Air America. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
FISA law was written in 1978. We're having a discussion in 2006. It's a different world.
Don't you? I mean, you couldn't write this stuff. Even as good a writer as you are, Sam, you couldn't write this man's routines. Could you?
I remember that quote. I just remember thinking, like, and the Constitution, that was written almost over... probably in the 1950s.
Probably. We're talking with Sam Cedar, whose new program on Air America Radio debuts this Sunday at 4 o'clock Eastern Time. And you can tune in either on your local affiliate that carries Air America, or you can log on to Sam's website or Air America's website. How can people hear if there's no Air America affiliate in the area?
If they go to samcedarshow.com, we'll have a link for them to listen.
samcedarshow.com. You know, I was thinking about something else about... about Ashcroft, you know, the insane choking irony that this guy wouldn't sign off on just one last criminal act. Remember, in when he ran for re-election to the Senate, the voters of Missouri preferred a dead man.
Yeah, they voted for Carnahan.
They wanted a dead man rather than Ashcroft.
Uh-huh.
And the only way Ashcroft's political career was, you'll pardon the expression, resurrected, was when Bush put him in charge of the Justice Department. God, that seems like something out of a bad novel that you read in high school, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I remember thinking, like, wow, this is about as bad as it gets. And it was, you know, it's one of those, what was that, Spinal Tap joke, you know, turn it up, this guitar goes up to 11.
Right.
One more than 10.
Oh, my God. All right, we've got some callers on hold who'd like to talk to you. Do you want to take a call or two?
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay, let's start with John, who's calling from San Francisco. John, say hi to Sam Cedar.
Oh, hey, hi, Sam. Hello?
Wait a minute. Yeah, we're here. Are you there, John?
Oh, yeah. it's a bad joke here that your producer just played on you. I accidentally hung up on Sam.
Okay, Sam.
I'm sure he'll call right back.
All right, let's put John back on hold. Let's put John on hold for a second, and Sam will call. Here comes Sam. God, I love high school radio.
I get disconnected. I think somebody at Air America.
I think somebody at Air America heard we were having a good time, and they put the whammy on us. Now let's go to John. In San Francisco, and we'll try not to hang up on Sam. John, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Now say hi to Sam.
Hey, Sam.
How you doing, John?
Ah, it works. It works. Yeah. It's alive.
Hey, it's good to hear from you, man. I used to listen to you and Janine, and that was, in my opinion, and a lot of other people here in San Francisco, one of the better shows that was on the network,
well,
Air America.
I'm glad you liked it. I think the quake is going to carry my Sunday show. But tune in on Sunday to check it out.
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't heard you. God, it's probably been, I don't know, what it's been, a year since Air America, when I feel that they crucified you and gave the Romans dumped down the sign on Mike all together when both of you guys stood up to try to get rid of a certain person named Lieberman.
Uh-huh.
And they pretty much cleared the board. Is that your feeling?
Well, no, I don't think it had anything to do with Lieberman, frankly. I mean, you know, we should be so lucky that the powers that be were actually listening to us that much.
It was at that same time, though. I mean, it was at that very same time, and you guys were gone, and sure enough, right after that, you know, it went through. But
well, let me jump in a second. And John, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. You know, the whole thing about departing or leaving a radio program without a whole lot of advance notice is that people do tend, Sam, to start thinking, well, there must have been some reason other than just piss poor management, or maybe in my case they didn't want to pay me any longer. And I got so many emails, and still get them, of people who are absolutely convinced that the reason I was fired so abruptly was because of my position on 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, I've said before that I don't know what the truth is, but I don't believe the official story. And also because I was busting up on the Israeli government for their tactics in Lebanon back during that war.
And you should also know that the Israeli government now is also busting up on the Israeli government for their tactics in Lebanon.
Right, I know.
You've been vindicated.
I have been, when the Israeli people are ready to run these guys out of town on a rail.
Not just the Israeli government. It's not just the Israeli people. I mean, they actually have a commission that has come back and reviewed their behavior and their whole reasons for going into Lebanon, and have basically come out and said exactly everything you were saying at that time.
Yeah, and wouldn't it be nice in this country to have a commission like that who would investigate what the Bush crime family has done? Oh,
exactly.
My God.
Exactly. Well, I mean, but to get back to your original point, no, I can tell you this. that if I'm convinced that if any of the people who are responsible for you not for you having been fired from Air America and me having been replaced on my side, if they had listened to the shows,
yes,
there'd be a better chance that we'd still be on.
Well, that's the thing, and that's true whether it's Air America or any other. I've worked at radio stations where the program directors had no idea what I was talking about. Now, that's not true here at Nova M. There's barely a night that goes by that Shelley or Anita Drobny don't tune in at some point because I get emails from them, and it's very creepy. I wish they'd leave me alone.
Well, sometimes it's nice to know that you're not being listened to by the people.
That's very true. All right, let's go back to R.W. is calling from Chattanooga, Tennessee. R.W., welcome to the program, R.W.
I just want to say hi to Sam down from here in Chattanooga. I'm just curious, you said you, now we know how Malloy challenged. I mean, Malloy just freaks people out. We've known that since Chicago. But, you know, you said you challenged Air America. I was wondering how you challenged them and what you thought that was kind of pushed the envelope a little bit.
Well, I mean, I was talking in sort of general terms, and I'd like to keep it in general terms, but I think, like, look, I'm not somebody who, on air or off air, keeps my opinions to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when Mike was let go, I expressed my feelings about it on air.
Oh.
And I expressed my feelings about it off air in probably even maybe more dramatic fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you do that enough, and, you know, when the opportunity comes for you not to be around and not to be a headache, because sometimes people take that, but I think that's, you know, I think that's only part of it. I really do think in the final analysis, it's really more about a philosophy. There's clearly an attempt to emulate the more standard talk format, at least in, you know, my time slot, which in my mind is one that is really basically played out. Look, you know, the talk radio show business is not exactly booming. And it's not, sticking with the old tired playbook doesn't necessarily work, but, you know, it's not my company.
Well, yeah. I thought you were very edgy, very funny, and very intelligent, and to me it sounds like the Triangulists, the DLCs are kind of, it's almost if, I can't prove this, it's almost as if they're trying to, you know, push the more, the net roots types out.
Well, I think part of it, too, and I think Sam will agree with this, R.W., there were three or four of us, five of us maybe, on the original Air America who really made the suits nervous. Sam and Janine, Randy, me, Mark Maron, we really made them nervous because they didn't know what that... First of all, there was no control over us at all. We all maintained complete artistic control of our own programs and editorial control. And Air America at the time was in such chaos where it concerned upper-level management, I don't think these people knew what the hell was going on anyway. But when they did, when they would tune in, Sam, I think they would get scared about what people like you and Janine and Randy and I, what we were saying. It was like, wait a minute, where does that fit on the spectrum of talk radio?
Yeah, I mean, listen, and the difference wasn't just simply about what our politics were, you know, specifically, but when you decide not to cover, or when it just doesn't even occur to you to cover in any serious manner, Anna Nicole Smith or any of the other myriad of stories out there that are like that, that I don't even know about because I don't pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
When you decide not to cover that, that becomes a statement in and of itself. I mean, you know, one of the things,
yes,
I know you talk about, Mike, and you certainly came from that world, is that, you know, what we get as supposedly news is really just gossip and crap.
That's right. That's right.
And when you don't provide that stuff, you know, the people who sort of live in that universe, they get nervous. And it really has nothing to do with the fact that, you know, I'm saying that, you know, Bob Schrum is a loser. Who cares about him?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, Joe Lieberman is, you know, is almost worse than a Republican. The issue is that, wait, how come he's not talking about JonBenet Ramsey or whatever. The latest who gives a crap story about something that really doesn't impact people's lives.
Hey, can you hold on through one more quick break here?
Absolutely.
Because I just want you to maybe look into a crystal ball and tell the people who are tuning in to hear you tonight, you know, just kind of your take on you know, without getting too weird here, but the future of so-called liberal or progressive talk radio, where you see it going. Our guest is Sam Cedar, whose program on Air America debuts this Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malone.
Don't email, however, and there's a reason. I don't want you reading my personal stuff.
We're talking with Sam Cedar for another couple of minutes here. Before you answer that question about where we're all going with this liberal or progressive talk radio, got an email here, Sam, from Irish Dave, and it has to do with Ashcroft in critical condition, and you know everybody showing up in his. Hospital room. My God, that must have been like, you know, changing subways at 4 o'clock in Manhattan. But anyway, Irish Dave writes, Mike, have you considered the psychic impact of 6 days in intensive care? Throw in some pain from an inflamed pancreas and the subsequent drugs. Maybe he said no to the unwarranted spying because he thought he had died and gone to hell. And then the demon duo, one a Catholic, shows up. Does the name Lee Atwater sound familiar? I hadn't thought about that. Maybe he was hallucinating. Maybe he thought he had gone to hell and there were a couple of demons standing there.
He was already on to his deathbed confession. He didn't realize he was coming back from the brink.
But really, what a weird guy. And one last thing before we get to that question. Somebody said you do a real good Christopher Hitchens impression. How about Hitchens on Hannity and Combs the other night? Was that not hysterical?
I'll tell you something. I had posted a segment from that on the blog at Sam Cedar Show just before you started to talk about it. That was fantastic.
Wasn't that great?
You know, I mean, Hitchens, in my mind, has basically lost his marbles.
Right.
Over this whole Iraq, after, you know, he was one of those guys who post 9/11 mix in who knows how many years of intense drinking,
right.
Continued drinking. He just sort of lost it. But I'll tell you what, a guy like that, he started with so much. He didn't need much to completely dispatch Hannity, and the stuff with Ralph Reed was fantastic.
It was. I watched that whole segment. Of course, it's all over the net now, and because I can't tune in Fox for anything, but it was hysterical. And as I mentioned earlier tonight, you take love him or hate him, no matter what you consider Hitchens, any of us consider Hitchens, he is brilliant.
Yep.
He's an intellectual. He has a wit not unlike. What's his name? I said it earlier tonight. Oscar Wilde.
Yeah.
He's tremendously on his toes. You cannot dodge and weave around this guy, and then put him in a group like Ralph Reed, Sean Hannity, and Alan Combs. You know, he's going to feast. He's just going to eat and a big bloody chunks out of these guys.
It's like he's sitting at a table with toddlers.
I know, it's incredible.
He's sitting at a table with toddlers, except for they're not cute toddlers.
No, they're not. They're little demons. All right, Sunday coming at 4 o'clock. Sam Cedar. It's called Cedar on a Sunday. No, what is it now?
Cedar on Sunday.
Cedar on Sunday. It sounds like, you know, Sunday in the park with Sam.
My dinner with, Tuesdays with Maury or something.
Right, Tuesdays with Maury. What do you see as the, without getting too deep and heavy into this, but what do you see as the direction, since Air America is definitely taking a new direction?
Yeah.
Nova M is struggling, but I think we're going to make it. I'm not sure what Jones is doing anymore, but what do you see as progressive or liberal talk? Where's it going to go, Sam?
There's clearly a market out there, and, you know, I think what Nova M is doing, what the Drobnys are doing, is exactly what you need to do, is just, you know, let the audience come to you, slowly build it, and, you know, in 5 years, things are going to be distributed in ways that we can't even imagine now. You know, you're going to have basically probably in 5 years the internet in your car.
Yeah.
And so then it really becomes about, you know, with such a dedicated and desiring and hungry audience out there for a genuine progressive talk, which isn't just about liberal talk, which isn't just about sort of a political position, but it's also just sort of about a different notion of what the media is supposed to provide for people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a big future for it, for people who believe in it and pursue it, you know, and for entrepreneurs. I mean, you know, one of the things I've come to realize about my experience at Air America is that when you have a business, it is really important to have the owner there every day.
Right.
And the person who's paying the bills needs to be there every day,
mm-hmm,
to make sure that their money is not being squandered on different people's individual agendas.
Yeah, what a concept. It's just like the old family store, you know,
exactly.
A dry goods store, a butcher shop, a greengrocer, you know, the same idea. Your good friend Kathy Bay wants to jump in here for a second. Kathy.
Hey, Sam, I just wanted to say hi and good luck on Sunday and just that I'm in complete agreement with you. You know, what a novel idea that, you know, there ought to be, I don't know, a radio person or something working at a radio network. You know, calling some shots, making some decisions.
Oh,
there's a thought.
You always cut to the quick, don't you?
Oh, she's very fast. Rape your wit and all that. Well, Sam, I hope this I'm kind of torn here. I hope this program goes real well for you at Air America. On the other hand, I also understand that you are free 5 days out of the week, and I can't help but part of me, you know, just kind of hope that maybe somewhere down the road, you know, wink wink, nudge nudge. And by the way, you want me to finish that? No, never mind. I got so many emails that night that we came to New York after I'd been fired, and you know, I snuck into the studio and you put me on the air in defiance of everything. There were a couple of people at Air America I thought I was going to get into fisticuffs with.
I know that story. I know.
And we sat there in that studio, and you had me on the program, which I thought was very courageous on your part, because nobody at the time knew what the hell was going on, just that I was gone. But,
yeah.
You know, Sam put me on, and we had fun. Is that the reason you moved upstate, by the way?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that nobody could see me on off hours.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, that was a ton of fun.
It was.
I enjoyed that immensely.
Well, listen, best of luck, a kiss to the wife, a hug to Myla, a good luck Sunday night. I do appreciate you joining me. And one more time, Sam, how can folks hear your program Sunday at 4 Eastern?
SamCedarShow.com will link to you all the information. Mike, thanks so much for having me on. It was such a pleasure. And
take care, man.
Thanks, Kathy, and hi to Molly.
We'll talk. Take care. Sam Cedar, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. Stay with us. Good to hear from Sam Cedar. Hope you all do tune in and check out his program. The Sam Cedar fans know how entertaining that program is. Good guy. Really good guy. There's some other good guys I want you to go check out right now. There's a live chat room that calls itself the Mike Molloy Listening Party. And I guess they do this every night. Go check it out. It's at democracyinteractive.com. Democracyinteractive.com. During the break, I popped in there to say hi to everybody. But go check it out, democracyinteractive.com. Very simple to log in, give yourself a password, and go. Democracyinteractive.com. Earlier this week, we talked about on the program, or I talked about, the series of essays in the current issue of Harper's Magazine, Undoing Bush, a forum on what has to be done to undo the damage this sorry son of a bitch has done to this country. And there's a series of 11 quick essays. The first one I read, I think it was Wednesday night. I was going to do some more of these this week, but it just got past me, and I don't want to do it this late in the program, so we're going to do it next week. We'll start next week. We have 10 to go. And they're not that long. They're, you know, maybe 10 minutes. But I want to get to the phone calls here tonight. So we're not going to do the essays or another essay tonight. We'll start it up for real on Monday. But Pat Buchanan, who writes, you know, he's a syndicated columnist. You know who Pat Buchanan is. He works for Creator Syndicate. And earlier tonight I went to antiwar.com, and which is one of the sites that has his current column posted. And he asked the question, who is right, Rudy Giuliani or Ron Paul, during the debate in South Carolina the other night? I didn't see it, but I've gotten lots of emails and some snippets of video and some transcripts of just how sick these Republicans really are. Giuliani has as much chance of getting the Republican nomination as I do. But as Paul Krugman pointed out today, as other people have pointed out, the Republican Party has lost its soul, whatever soul it had. It is a monster that is being pecked to death by its own craziness, and it's not going to be alive too much longer. The Republican Party is in its death throes, and when something as that wields as much power as it still does, as the Republican Party is in its death throes, watch out, because as it thrashes and gasps for last breaths, it can do an awful lot of damage. And as Krugman pointed out in the New York Times today, maybe we've been treating George Bush too harshly. All Bush is doing is parroting what all Republicans believe, which is a theme I've talked about on this program. All Republicans are sick. They're just sick in the head. I don't know how they got sick. Maybe from you know, 60, 70, 80 years of being Republicans. The Republican Party, I don't mean everybody 60, 70, 80 years old who's a Republican. Hell, some of them are only 20, you know, in their 20s. But this Republican Party has turned into a bestial, kind of ugly, demonic, sick creature that truly, and we need to thank somebody for this, in its death throes. It's dying, and thank God for that. So here's Buchanan talking about the this dust-up between Ron Paul and this little twit from New York who tries to paint himself as a conservative. Giuliani is not conservative. He's a little power-mad, adulterous thug who happens to support some ideas that liberals and progressives have worked our asses off to make sure we're part of the political dialogue in this country. And Giuliani just figures, well, you know, when he's the mayor of New York, he'll adopt a liberal stance on a woman's right to privacy. He'll adopt a liberal stance on gay rights. He'll adopt a liberal stance on gun ownership or capital punishment, whatever. But when he gets out in the hustings and starts acting like a Republican, he just reverts to form, just becomes another Republican jackass. So anyway, this is what Buchanan wrote. He said it was the decisive moment of the South Carolina debate, hearing Ron Paul recite the reasons for Arab and Islamic resentment of the United States, including 10 years of bombing in Iraq and sanctions that brought death to thousands of Iraqis after the Gulf War. Well, you know, Ron Paul was simply pointing out the obvious. We've talked about that on this program. You don't have, you know, you can be a high school graduate and figure that out, for Christ's sake. But Giuliani exploded, and he said, quote, "That's really an extraordinary statement as someone who lived through the attack of 9/11, that we invited the attack because we were attacking Iraq. I don't think I've ever heard that before, and I have heard some pretty absurd explanations for September 11th. I would ask that the congressman withdraw that comment and tell us that he didn't really mean that, end quote. Now, that's what Giuliani said. And then, as Buchanan points out, the applause for what Rudy Giuliani said was thunderous. The soundbite of the night and the best moment of Rudy's campaign was that moment. Now, Buchanan goes on. After the debate on Fox News' Hannity and Combs came one of those delicious moments on live television. As Michael Steele, a Republican spokesman, was saying that Ron Paul should probably be cut out of future debates, the running tally of votes by Fox News viewers was showing Ron Paul the winner of the debate. Brother Hannity seemed startled and perplexed by the votes being text messaged in the thousands to Fox News, saying Paul won. Romney was second, Rudy third, and McCain far down the track of 4%. When Ron Paul said the 9/11 killers were, quote, over here because we are over there, end quote, he was not excusing the mass murders of 3,000 Americans. He was explaining the roots of hatred out of which the suicide killers came. Lest we forget, Osama bin Laden was among the Mujahideen whom we, in the Reagan decade, were aiding when they were fighting to expel the Red Army from Afghanistan. We sent them Stinger missiles. We sent them Spanish mortars and sniper rifles, and they helped drive the Russians out. What Ron Paul was addressing was the question of what turned the allies we aided into haters of the United States. Was it the fact that they discovered we have freedom of speech or separation of church and state? Do they hate us because of who we are, or do they hate us because of what we do? Osama bin Laden, in his declaration of war in the 1990s, said it was U.S. troops on the sacred soil of Saudi Arabia, U.S. bombing and sanctions of a crushed Iraqi people, and U.S. support of Israel's persecution of the Palestinians that were the reasons he and his mujahideen were declaring war on us. Almost all agree that, horrible as 9/11 was, it was not anarchic terror. It was political terror, done with a political motive and a political objective. What does Giuliani think the political motive was for 9/11? Was it because we're good and they're evil? Is it because they hate our freedom? Is it that simple? Ron Paul says Osama bin Laden is delighted we invaded Iraq. Does the man not have a point? The United States is now tied down in a bloody guerrilla war in the Middle East and increasingly hated in Arab and Islamic countries, where we were once hugely admired as the first and greatest of the anti-colonial nations. Does anyone think that Osama is unhappy with what is happening to us in Iraq? Of the 10 candidates on stage in South Carolina, Dr. Paul alone opposed the war. He alone voted against the war. Have not the last 5 years vindicated him? Rudy Giuliani implied that Ron Paul was unpatriotic to suggest the violence against us out of the Middle East may be in reaction to U.S. policy in the Middle East. Was President Hoover unpatriotic when, the day after Pearl Harbor, he wrote to friends, quote, "You and I know that this continuous putting pins in rattlesnakes finally got this country bitten," end quote. Pearl Harbor came out of the blue, but it also came out of the troubled history of U.S.-Japanese relations going back 40 years prior to Pearl Harbor. Hitler's attack on Poland was naked aggression. But to understand it, we must understand what was done at Versailles after the Germans laid down their arms based on Wilson's 14 points. We do not excuse, but we must understand. Ron Paul is no TV debater. Put up on that stage in Columbia, South Carolina, he was speaking intolerable truths. Understandably, Republicans do not want him back, telling the country how the Republican Party blundered into this misbegotten war. By all means, throw out of the debate the only man who was right from the beginning on Iraq. So that's Pat Buchanan, his syndicated column from today, I believe. From today. And you know, I stay out of the Republican thing because I think they're all bastards and beasts. I do know that Ron Paul is a different. I don't know why he's a Republican. He ran for president as a libertarian back in the 80s, but he's making a run for the presidency now as a Republican. So yeah, he's gonna take a lot of flack.
It's kind of a freaky week when you find yourself rooting for Ashcroft, Christopher Hitchens, and Pat Buchanan.
That's true. That's very true. A very strange week. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans, a form of suicide.
Republican side!
What else we got that's worth a damn? Oh, yeah, this, you know, Giuliani's challenge to Ron Paul that somehow he was, he had to take back his statement that the reasons for the attack on this country had to do with what we are doing over there, and they responded by coming over here, and that, in fact, making a truthful statement like that rendered Ron Paul unpatriotic. Well, is it today's Washington Post, Kathy? There's a quote in here. Former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld once wondered aloud whether we were creating more terrorists than we were killing. And in counterinsurgency doctrine, that's precisely the right question. So I wonder if this little half-wit Rudy Giuliani would accuse Rumsfeld of being unpatriotic. I think Rumsfeld's a psychopathic mass killer, but that's beside the point. I think all of this points out something very serious, and Americans, I think, have taken note of this and are going to do something about it, and it's going to be something that's lasting. And that is that Republicans, first of all, cannot govern. I truly believe that in order to govern, you have got to have, to some degree, a sense of honesty. I'm not saying that all Democrats who govern are honest, far from it. But you have to have a sense of honesty, you know, what honesty is. You have to have a sense of morality, what morality is. You have to have a sense of decency. You have to have a sense of respect for the law, whether it's domestic or international. You have to have an ability to understand certain things about unfettered, unbridled, predatory capitalism. It would devour alive everything in its path, and you have to keep it in check. Unchecked capitalism is a murderous beast that will eat everything it can get its mouth around. Republicans qualify on none of those levels. They are amoral. They have no ethical sense. As far as predatory capitalism, they will vote for predatory capitalism even as it eats them. They are politically speaking, they are total naifs. They don't understand anything about our form, our attempt at self-government. They disrespect the Constitution of the United States. They subscribe to the idea that Bush put out there, that the Constitution is nothing more than a goddamn piece of paper. How many times have there been reports about surveyors, pollsters, going in amongst Republicans and presenting, in kind of veiled language, the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution and saying, what do you think of this, these ideas? And how many times have the answers come back that the ideas in the Bill of Rights are reactionary, revolutionary, have no place in a democracy? This comes from Republicans. It doesn't come from Democrats. Republicans are Republican political thought is worse than useless. It will only destroy. It'll destroy us. It'll destroy the world. It'll destroy international relations. It is a sick, dead philosophy. And it's still being pumped out there by the rank and file, by people who consider themselves proudly You know, 45% of Republicans still support George Bush. How is that possible? Except, and unless you factor in the truism that Republicans are dumbasses. To put it in very simple language, they are dumbasses who don't understand anything, much less self-government. So I think what we are seeing is just Darwinism, political Darwinism. There's no reason for Republican Party ideas to continue because they do nothing to ensure the survival of the species. So they're going to be discarded, hopefully forever.
Be left out. Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Welcome back. 25 before the hour. All of a sudden, I want to go to a Stones concert. I want to get altered and go to a Stones concert. Oh, my God. I had a very kind of sad moment tonight watching ABC News. I watched the news, and then I came downstairs where Kathy and Molly was having a sugarless popsicle, and before bedtime, and another one of those tears in my eyes moments. And I came downstairs, and Kathy said, "Oh God, now what?" Every time when I go watch the news, you know, I come back into the kitchen or whatever. Kathy says, "Oh God, now what?" So I had a couple of tears in my eyes, and I said, "Well, I just watch ABC." And, you know, she said, okay, what village was wiped out? What ethnic group is dying? No. It was nothing like that. I said, I forget the organization now, but they're coming up with music awards that they're going to award once a year to that musician, whether it's a performer or writer or a combination of both, who's had a profound and deep effect on popular music. And this year is the first award, and it went to Paul Simon. So Paul Simon was their Person of the Week, you know, that Friday night thing that they do on ABC. And Charles Gibson, the anchor, did the voiceover. It was a nice three and a half minute long package on Paul Simon. And had video from way back in the late 60s, early 70s. You know, he and Garfunkel were only together, I think, 4 years, 66 to 70. And then Simon broke out on his own. And the music he did, Paul Simon did, all the tunes of our lives that are there in the soundtrack of Your Life and Mine from not just the Beatles, not just the Stones, not just Billy Joel, but, you know, Paul Simon, these great singer-songwriters that we were fortunate enough to have in our generation. And so I'm watching this, and here's Paul Simon from years ago. They have the concert footage. And, you know, from 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 35 years ago, 40 years ago. And then Paul Simon doing a live interview today. And I'm looking at these pictures of Paul Simon 40 years ago, 35 years ago, and then Paul Simon today. And obviously, I mean, I look in the mirror and say this, but you know, I see Paul Simon, who is not that cute, jivey, hip, songwriter from all those years ago, but I see a guy who's around my age now, who's getting older, who talks kind of tired, and it was just absolutely momentarily kind of heartbreaking. You ever feel that way about, I don't know if you're in my generation or not, but you feel that way about the people, the performers, the artists, the musicians, the dancers in your generation? There's something very, very weird about watching an entire generation get old, isn't there? Huh? Wow.
Narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp, I turn my collar to the cold and damp. When my eyes were...
Mike Malloy's verklempt moment. Oh, I don't know where that came from, but never mind. I tossed it, and I'll toss it right back out. Let's go back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Miami. Joe, welcome to the program.
Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
Pretty good. Mike, you know, I was never in the military, and the closest I got to was playing soldier in the woods.
Yeah.
But when I heard this story last week about putting eight guys in two Humvees on a dark road at 4:30 in the morning
with
no air cover in the middle of the Triangle of Death, I couldn't believe it.
It's incredible.
What do we have attack helicopters for? I mean, think about it. You have a Cobra gunship flying above them. They're in voice communication. They have a GPS fix on the thing, and they have thermal imaging to look around and see these people sneaking up on them.
Right, right.
This is what we got. This is the kind of leadership we got. You know? Oh, yeah, that's right. Those Cobra gunships, they only use them to watch John McCain when he's walking around a Marcus someplace.
Yeah, and you know, and don't say anything, but you know what has already happened to those three captured American soldiers.
I heard they drained one lake already. That's why I figured you're going to find them is in the bottom of a river someplace. You know, I mean,
it's going to be awful when they find these three young Americans. It's going to be hideous and horrifying.
You know, Mike, but the whole problem is there's almost 4,000 guys dead for nothing. Bin Laden attacked us from Afghanistan, not Iraq.
Right.
Unbelievable. Take care, my man.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you checking in. Yeah, those three American soldiers, ABC or NBC had pictures of them up tonight. And I don't know about you, but I can't even think about what they've gone through now. And... the condition their bodies are going to be in when they're found. Jesus. Mike is calling from Long Island, New York. Mike, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Pretty good. Wondering if those three GIs in captivity think that the Geneva Conference is a quaint document.
Well, that's the thing. Thanks to people like Gonzalez and Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld, and we all talked about this. We talked about it 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when this filthy invasion and occupation began. Go ahead, smash the Geneva Conventions, and when our people are captured, they're going to die the kind of deaths that you can only imagine in the worst nightmares. Demonic nightmares, and so it all rests on the Bush crime family, every bit of it.
And you know, Mark, you might talk about them being dumb, and you have to say to yourself, well, they have to be dumb, because can't they have the foresight to see that if our GIs get caught and they're going to be under captivity, that they're going to be tortured because we think torture is okay.
But Mike, the Republicans don't care, and this is what we've been talking about in this program. For a number of years now, Republicans don't give a tinker's damn about soldiers, about Americans, about freedom, about justice, about anything. They don't care. So when they suspend the Geneva Conventions unilaterally and say we're going to do anything we goddamn choose to do to anybody we pick up, it's just one more example of the fact that Republicans don't care. They don't care if an American soldier is tortured and it takes 8 or 9 hours to die. They don't care.
They don't have a soul, Mike. They really don't.
No.
They really don't.
They're amoral. They're soulless. Absolutely.
And the other thing is, how in this day and age can you be a party that has three people running for president that does not believe in evolution? And they don't even feel embarrassed by it. It boggles the mind.
Yeah.
Boggles the mind. And the last thing I just want to throw at before I go is the news media is making this big deal how five Republicans now, whether they're congressmen or senators, are calling for the resignation of Gonzalez as if that's some land swell of Republican of people calling for his resignation. After all this guy's done, after all the crimes, how could there be five?
I know.
That
means 85% of the Republican senators are not, or 87% are not, which pretty much holds with Paul Krugman's column, which pretty much holds with Pat Buchanan's column today, and also pretty much validates in my own personal mind what I've thought about this. Republicans are filthy. They are just sick sons of bitches. They don't care, Mike. They just don't care.
There are
44 Republican senators who support Bush no matter what he does. No matter what he does, they support him.
I mean, if Gonzalez was caught with a hooker with a joint in his hand, maybe there would be 10 Republicans calling for his resignation.
Yeah, maybe 10. You're absolutely right. All right, Mike.
All right, Mike. Have a good night.
All right, appreciate you checking in. They're awful, Republicans. And I never used to think that, even back in the Goldwater days, back in the mid-60s. You know, I thought Republicans were an oddity. I thought, God, well, you know, but having had Republicans in my family, you know, I recognized all those years ago that, okay, Republicans are different from normal people, but they're not murderously different. They're not sociopathically different. They're just politically different from normal people. And you know, as long as they're the minority party, and they had been the minority party for probably 30 years, relatively speaking, by the time I got my political consciousness. So Republicans were never that much of a threat. There were few Republicans that I actually admired. I thought I'd never vote for them because I am adamantly opposed to Republicanism. But I kind of admired them. But these Republicans today, and a lot of people say, well, these are not Republicans, Mike. That's like saying people like Falwell were not Christians. Yes, they were. Yes, they are. This is how they have corrupted and destroyed and ruined the Republican Party. So we'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Thanks to the usual crew of bandits who put this program together every night. That would be Ian Huff, who engineers and answers your calls in Phoenix at KPHX. Our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota, Mark Marshall, our webmaster, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com on the website, and Catherine Bay, she who must be obeyed, the executive producer of this program. Don't forget, Sam Cedar, this Sunday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, on Air America Radio. And you can go to his website to plug in, samcedershow.com. S-E-D-E-R is his last name, for those of you who don't know. And should I mention this again, Kathy, about going to novamradio.com?
Nah, just talk about the cruise.
And signing up for downloads and podcasts and a chance to win $10,000. I'll just say it. I'm not gonna bitch at anybody. I'm not gonna be a jackass here. But I am really kind of embarrassed. That, you know, when I came to Nova M and said hire me, and I said, look at this online petition, 20,000 signatures, and there were 40 or 50,000 emails and phone calls that went to Air America. And they said, well, okay, yeah, we'll hire you. So we got cracking, and then somebody came up with the idea of this Nova M Founders Club. And I said, oh, that'll be, what, you want 5,000 people? Piece of cake. Well, yes?
Okay, I'll talk about the cruise. I just want to let people know, first off, we're going on a cruise in October, and this is just a caveat for all of you folks who might want to come and you're waiting on the fence. Get a passport. You need one anyway. That's but right. Apparently it's taking literally months longer. I mean, about twice as long to get a passport now as it used to, for probably obvious reasons. So just get your passports, whether you cruise or not. But if you're thinking about it, do it.
Yeah, we found that out. We have to get one from Molly, and mine has expired because it's been a long time since I've had the need to travel out of the country, or the desire to travel out of the country. Well, I had the desire, never had the money. So mine has run out, and of course that's easy enough to get it renewed. But we had to get the necessary documents for Molly because, you know, she might be some sort of a spy or a subversive. She might have a bomb in her diaper bag or something. But and we have been told by the people at the passport office, plan ahead because this is taking a long time. So, Baltazar is calling from Phoenix. That's an interesting name. Baltazar, welcome to the program.
I'm on. Hello, Mike?
Yeah.
Hey.
What?
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
Oh, great. And, you know, the really reason I phoned today was because Sam Cedar, what the Air America did to him previously. Anyway, long story short, what I want to talk to you about now is, do you think we're going to flesh out all of the, because I'm really concerned about this, 2008 election.
Yeah.
And do you think we're really going to be able to flesh out all of the issues and everything? Because I think Mike Gravel has a couple of big ideas, but I don't think anybody's really ready to listen to them. What do you think about that?
Mike Gravel he's a Republican, right?
No, he's not. He's a Democrat.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. It's 5 before midnight here in the East, and I just lost my mind for a second. No,
no
I know
problem.
Who,
I understand that.
The problem with Mike Gravel, and this is just the way it works in American politics, is, first of all, like John McCain, he's way too old. We don't elect people in this country who are beyond a certain age.
Think so?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We don't elect women. We don't elect Americans of African descent. We are not there. We are not a sophisticated society where we go for the best leader.
Well, given that, do you think we can make a difference? Because you know what? I was a Dini maniac when I'm in Phoenix now, and when I lived in Sacramento. And, you know, the very first time I ever got involved in politics was when Dean, and you know what? Dean got slammed by the Republican Party, and he got slammed by his own party.
He got slammed by the media. That's what killed him. I'll tell you what to do. First of all, go to draftgore.com and sign the petition. Secondly, start thinking seriously about the one man, Democrat or Republican, and I'm not saying Al Gore's a liberal. He's not. I'm not saying he's necessarily a progressive. He's not.
He's a centrist. I don't like that.
Well,
but anyway, go ahead.
Well, as far as somebody who has the ability to handle the office, who has the experience to handle the office, who has respect for the Constitution, and who is fully aware of what this entire planet is facing over the next 50, 75 years, Al Gore's the man.
But, Mike, that's what Gravel is all about. He did
I'm sorry,
the
he's,
papers.
He,
That was the seminal...
I understand. Do you know how long ago that was?
That was. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Okay. I know he did the Pentagon Papers. Okay.
That was the one seminal issue that...
I understand. I understand. Baltazar, I got to leave it there. We're out of time. Thanks. Call again. You said this is your first time calling. Don't make it your last. Call again. I'll see you Monday night, Truth Seekers. Have a good weekend. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.